From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
If you're listening in live, you will know that it's Thursday, the 28th of January, with episode 103 of The Dice Men Cometh. We've made our ton. We've paused for a second to wave the bat to the crowd. And then we've got our heads down to move on to build the larger innings.
Mm. Now, I don't know what he's talking about.
I'm using a cricket metaphor, Leon.
Oh, cricket.
And you'll see why in a minute, okay?
Okey
so
doke.
What I want to ask you, gents, is think back. Think back about 18 years to the 28th, or in fact even the 27th of January 1998. Do you remember where you were, Garth?
I was in packing my bags to go to London, actually.
Oh, there you go.
I was about to start my two-year working holiday over in the UK.
And, Leon, were you just being tucked into bed by your mum and dad?
No. But I probably was playing Super Nintendo somewhere, yes.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Well, about...
What were you doing, Mark?
About 18 years ago...
Yeah.
On the 27th, in fact... I was watching Australia and South Africa playing the third final of the Carlton United one-day series, but I kept getting interrupted while I was watching that final.
Yeah?
Because, you see, where I was watching it was in the labour ward of the Royal Women's Hospital in Sydney.
What?
And, you know, I kept getting interrupted by my wife who was having labour pains, and I kept having to rush in and... deal with her and rush back out and see the score again. It was a very close game, but in the end, Australia made 247 for 7, mm-hmm. and South Africa were bowled out for 233. So
that's
it was an Australian victory, and they won the series. And a little while after that, just not long after midnight, I think about 1 a.m., 1:30 a.m., my son was born, my firstborn son, 18 years ago today.
Does it feel like 18 years?
I'm feeling really old. I'm feeling really old. So we'll come back to that in a minute. But, gents, what is on the show this evening?
Well, this week we are going to do something a little bit different. However, we are going to stick with what we've been playing this week because we have quite a few games we need to talk about. And then our resident David Stratton, i.e. Leon, is going to do a movie review.
But this is a show about board games.
Yeah, and... I know. And I think we might have to announce, say, 12 winners of our 12 weeks of Christmas competition. What do you reckon, lads?
Absolutely.
About time.
Definitely. So we have got a jam-packed show. I think we will have to sort of split up these competition entrants. Otherwise, we're going to rattle off 12 names and no one's going to know who's won what. But how about we start with a song? And then we come back and talk about something else.
Let's do that. And I'm going to dedicate this one to my son, Will. As I said, he's 18 today. He's never listened to the show, so it doesn't matter. But I hope he's enjoying his night.
Alice Cooper with I'm 18. That's shouting out to Mark Jr., who's having his 18th celebration birthday today.
Also known as Will.
I think he'd much rather be Mark Jr., don't you reckon? Anyway, Leon, how about you kick us off with what you've been playing this week?
Well, what I've been playing was my number 3 game of 2015.
Wow!
Which is a little game that is not little in the slightest, called Forbidden Stars.
Okay.
So, Forbidden Stars, it is a 4X war game from Fantasy Flight. You may have heard of them.
Mm.
It is set in the Warhammer 40K universe. You may have heard of that as well.
Oh, yes.
The aim of the game is to win battles, claim planets for their resources, and win objective tokens that are scattered across the universe by destroying your foes. You know, that old chestnut.
Yeah.
So players choose between 4 unique factions. You've got the Space Marines that excel in defense and morale. You've got the Chaos Marines that focus on offense and strength. The Eldar, which are kind of like space elves-ish, they have the most spaceships and are the quickest faction to make it across the board, and the orcs that try and overwhelm their opponent by sheer numbers and filth, because that's what orcs do. So at the setup, each player takes a certain number of planet boards, depending on the number of players, and they place them one by one, building the universe that we're going to be exploring and conquering throughout the game. Each board is double-sided and has different planets that are different sizes and have different resources on it, So even though, especially since this is such a long game, you'll probably never, ever play the same game twice with the same board.
Cool.
Which is something that definitely helps for the replayability of these type of things.
Yep.
During this phase, the players also start putting their units out on these planets that they're deploying, as well as a war factory, which will be considered their home base. As well as the objective tokens, which you need to actually win the game, you will be placing your opponent's objective tokens on the different planets that you put out. So you will be able to strategically, hopefully, keep them away from them as best that you can, because you don't want them getting near them, except for things like the pesky Eldar that just zip all around everywhere. Also, you've got to place down these things called warp storms, which are these little cardboard strips that you place between the different sections of planets, and all units during a specific phase can't pass through them. So what you can do is you can make certain people's turns a living hell by boxing them in or keeping them away from where they need to be.
Yes.
Like my first turn in the game I played recently, two warp storms were placed next to my guys and we were all in one corner.
Okay.
So my entire first turn was just sit there, Leon, and build up your orcs of nastiness because we're not going to let you out anywhere.
But that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, true. But you can also do the same to your opponents and kind of put little tunnels for yourself across the board to make it easier and keep them away from you, which definitely doesn't hurt the situation. Once that's all done, the game begins. And over 8 rounds, what you'll be doing is placing orders. Each round you get to play 4 orders, all at different places of the board. The locations for where you place the orders are known by your opponents, but they don't know what orders you've placed because the tokens are face side down and they get revealed one by one in the next phase by everybody. And if people start putting tokens on top of yours, that means that whatever you wanted to do, you have to wait for them to do that action first. So they could clean up the rest of their tokens around the board before they get to one that they know you're probably going to do something nasty to them. They can get to it first. The 4 different actions you can do. You can build new units, ships, and structures. Like you can build cities, which mean you can build better units later. You can build bastions, which are like defensive structures on planets, as well as they stop your planets from getting a thing called orbital strike, which is what the battleships that fly around the galaxy can do. They can't actually go onto planets, but they can shoot down onto it.
Pew, pew.
Unless you've got one of these bastions. Then there's strategize. With the strategize, you can purchase upgrade cards that they add upgrades to those different tokens that I said you put out on the board. So it could be things like, oh, during your deploy phase, you get an extra couple of bucks or something to that effect. Also, you can upgrade your combat deck, which I'll get to when I talk about how the combat works. But essentially, you can take 2 cards out of the combat deck, which is 5 pairs of cards. So you take out 1 pair that you didn't really like, and you can put in a pair of new cards that's probably much better to your strategy. And when you actually go into a combat, you'll shuffle that deck and you'll take 5 of those cards in.
Cool.
Which, again, I'll explain in a second.
Now, how long is this game? You said it was long. How long does it take to play this?
4 of us took 4.5 hours.
Wow, okay.
And with
that's approaching epic.
And with 3... Yeah, it's very close. And with 3 players I've played before, that also took about 3.5 hours. And this is with people that know this game as well. So it's not that difficult. Hopefully I've explained it, or continue to explain it a bit more, but it's really not that difficult once you get into it, but it just takes time, especially once you know what you want to do and people figuring out where their orders are going. So the one kind of swipe I'll have at this game is that it's definitely got some analysis paralysis problems if people don't really get onto it quickly.
Oh, now, I know you've got a lot more to tell us about this game, but already...
Yes.
It's sounding to me a lot like 2 games I'm thinking of. One, it's sounding very, very much like, and that's Game of Thrones, the board game, where you've got a map, you've got the orders you can do, you move your units around. Obviously, they're not in the space, but they're in Westeros, which is, let's just face it, it's more exciting than space. You've got that happening. I don't know if you've ever played that one, but that's another epic game.
I played that game the first time I ever went to the Hobart Game Society.
Ah, there you go.
And funnily enough, I didn't even think about it, but you're bang on. It's exactly that.
And then the other one I'm thinking of, and I can't remember the name of it, it's one of Trent's favourite games, where you've got the orders, it's middle...
Yeah,
that one.
Yeah. Warrior Knights. Yes.
That's the one. Where the same thing. You've got orders. You've got that one's got a lot more going on. Different things, but it sounds intriguing. Tell us more, Leon.
Anyway, back to the things you can do. You can do a thing called dominate, which is where you gain the assets,
whips, chains.
Well, well, if you look at the cool art, then yes, there's definitely whips and change involved. You use that to gain the resources for the planets that you've already taken in a certain system. There's three different kinds of resources. One just gives you extra money to buy stuff. Another one gives you these reinforcement tokens, which you can use in battle,
yep.
which when you don't have them are the most irritating things in the world. But when you do have them, hey! All the other games I played before this recent one, I never went near them, and they drove me spare. But this newest one with the orcs, you get heaps of them because they just like throwing dudes at you.
Of course.
And yeah, they were much fun had by me, at least.
That's one. And then that's one person having fun at the expense of orcs.
Exactly. And then the final one is advance, which is where you move your big old ships and big old dreadnoughts and what into a system and get the fighting on.
Yeah.
So during combat, what you'll do is you'll each play combat cards from your hand. Like I said, you'll have a deck of 10, which is five pairs of different cards. You'll shuffle them, draw five of them, and then that's what you're going to have for the battle. You'll play one of the cards. You'll call in the reinforcements if you've got them. You'll roll battle dice, yeah. which everyone loves a bit of rolling a battle dice. Mm-hmm. There's three different symbols you can get on the dice. There's an attack symbol, which speaks for itself, a defense symbol, which ditto, and a morale symbol. And the morale symbol is used for if there's three rounds that ends in a stalemate, the person with the most morale is the one that wins the battle.
Okay.
And then all the other person's units are wiped out and you claim whatever planet that you're on.
Now, with combat, are you generally fighting one other player or potentially the other three people who are fighting over this planet? What's the... How has your combat worked so far?
It's one-on-one because you play... There can only ever be like one army on a planet at a time, mm-hmm. and you will play your deploy order to go onto that planet, and then you'll fight them. That doesn't mean that the second that battle's finished and that round's over, yeah. somebody's also deployed in there, and you'll go on from there.
Okay.
So yeah, so you go through all that. After it's all done, that people will check to see if they've got their objective tokens, which you need to get equal to the amount of players that there is, and if somebody has done that, they're the winner.
Woohoo! How easy is that?
It sounds, as I said, it sounds a lot like Game of Thrones, but
yeah.
how does it... So if it's that easy, Leon,
yes.
4 hours,
yeah.
Is it a massive, massive board and you've got to travel a long way to get to the other players?
It can, but it's very, very strategic because you've got to think... Like I said, you've only got these four orders each round and there's only 8 rounds in the game.
Okay.
So you've really got to think about where you're going to go and... Also got to think about what your opponent's doing and what order that you play them in, and do I upgrade myself now or do I go straight into the battle? And there's also a lot of table talk with this kind of thing, saying like, well, I'm going there. Like, for instance, in this game that I just played, someone accidentally put one of my tokens very close to me at the start of the game. So I said to him, and there was some units there from a rival army, I said to him, I'm taking that.
your mother suck
it. The situation he was on the board, it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I said... Leave now. I don't want to hurt you this early in the game.
Don't make me hurt you.
You can let me have it now or in a few rounds' time. Let's just save each other the aggro. And luckily enough, he did move aside and let me take it.
Oh, he's a very wise boy then, isn't he?
Because it was definitely going to happen anyway. But yeah, I've played this game, I think, about 4 times now. And I'd almost be undefeated, except the fact that I haven't won it that often. But listen, there's a reason I say that. The last 2 games that I've played, there was a 3-player game and a 4-player game. Both of them... I've been winning the entire game from step dot
yep.
until the last order token of the last round of the game, and I have lost. That's happened now twice
yep.
in a row. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I've enjoyed it immensely every time. And the yep. fact that it's been so close between everybody. The 3-player game we had, it was neck and neck between the 3 of us. This 4-player game, it was there was 2 of us that were a bit ahead of the other 2.
Sure.
But it was still the whole game. No one was really getting utterly annihilated. Excellent. Which I suppose could happen in the game, but I've yet to see it happen anyway.
Cool. That sounds like really, really good fun. 3 or 4 hours. Mark, should we play a song and then come back and do some other things and talk about some of the other games we've been playing this week?
Well, before we do that, do we want to... Give away some games, ooh, maybe.
Well, you've got the master list.
I have the list. We've rolled some dice. We've taken some names. And let's just announce that the first winner, not that these are in any order, but no. Maybe from game size from smallest to biggest, Marcus Pugh. Yeah. Pew, pew, pew. Woo. Congratulations. You have won a copy. Speaking of pew, 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 Star Realms.
Oh, there you go.
An epic deck-building space-themed game.
Exactly.
And also lucky Conrad Raup. I hope I pronounce his name correctly. Conrad has won a copy of Stuff and Nonsense.
There you go.
Elizabethan faux adventuring game where you pretend you're going on expeditions. Really, you're just going around London collecting artifacts that make it look like you've been on expeditions and beating your players. So they're the first couple of winners. Excellent. We'll be announcing more through the show. Total of 12, believe it or not, in our 12 Games of Christmas. But we'll be back right after this track.
That was Rise by Parabell on Edge Radio 99.3 with The Dice Men Cometh. What else have we been playing, lads?
Well, how about I go? And we can talk about one of Ted Auspach's latest games, One Night Revolution.
Yeah, let's talk about
Auspach's
that.
Auspach is at it again.
Yeah, he is. Now, this is, again, a sort of werewolfy style, cooey style, bit of everything that has been done half a million times before. This was a very, 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 very successful Kickstarter by Indie Boards and Card Games. They have done a lot of these, and this raised, from memory, $150,000-$160,000. So it did all right. For a game that basically comes in a really, really small box, it comes with very, very few components, but packs a bit of a punch for a little game. Now, I'll just read from the rule book to give you the overview of what it is. Now, One Night Revolution is a social deduction game with secret identities.
Bomb.
Players are either rebel fighters attempting to overthrow a malignant government or government informants trying to thwart the rebels. The game takes place in a single round. The rebel players must identify a single informant to win. The informants win if they remain undiscovered. Now, it's pretty straightforward, this game. All you're going to do is, similar to a lot of things, you're going to have two bunches of IDs. You're going to have a whole bunch of the rebels and a whole bunch of the informants. You're going to turn them upside down, shuffle them to each players. There's always going to be a limited number of the informants because they're the ones who us good rebel guys want to try and locate. So you'll shuffle those up face down, and each player gets a chance to have a look at their identity secretly. Now, this does play from 3 to 10 players, so it does expand quite well. It doesn't go into crazy territory like Two Rooms and a Boom or Ultimate Werewolf, where there's, 100 possible different scenarios and roles that you can have. You're then going to essentially give each other an... I guess you've got a main controller who's going to take control of each round, and that'll go round and round the table clockwise. But once each player has been allocated their faction, they're going to get given a card face down, which is their unique ability. And this is where it becomes a little bit more interesting, is because you're going to have certain abilities that you as an individual will be able to do. The abilities that you have will also depend on your alignment, whether or not you're a rebel or whether you're an informant. Once everyone's been allocated, the controller's going to start, and it's going to start in very, was it Resistance Avalon and a whole bunch of those, where everyone closes their eyes. And then the informants will open their eyes and have a look around so that any other informant knows who they are. Then they're all going to close their eyes. And then once that's done, starting with the controller, they're going to do their special ability that's listed on their ID card. So it might be something like tapping a player to the left or right of you on the shoulder, or swapping some of the roles around, or a whole bunch of different things that you can do. That will then go round and round the table until the player to the right of the controller has finished. You will then say, all tasks complete. Everyone open your eyes. And then the fun begins, because that's where you then essentially start accusing everyone of being a rebel. You can freely talk about the action that you took during the eyes closed phase. Of course you can lie and say that you did any of the other actions. There's a whole bunch of little round ability, I guess, tokens that'll be in the centre of the table as well. Mm. They can get moved in front of each player to be able to say, well, I think, Leon, you're the thief. So I'm going to move the thief over to you. It's got a rebel side and an informant side. I think you're the informant. Just so that everyone at the table knows, that's probably what Leon is, or at least what I think. Leon will then go, well, stuff you, I'm actually the this and the that. And that's the meat of the game, is it'll be a discussion about, well, I did this during the night, therefore I'm a rebel, therefore I'm a good guy. Mark, I trust you. Of course I trust you. I know you did exactly what you said you did on the card. Leon, you're scum. You're the informant, and it's your turn to die.
This is exactly what did happen in the game, though. Yeah. It's a nice little, imagine if this happened. That's what bloody well happened.
It did, and that's because you're dirty informing scum.
Yeah. Well, yes, I was.
Yeah. But it goes really, really quickly. It says it plays in about 15 minutes. once everyone's had the chance to have their 2 cents about I'm good, you're bad, da-da-da-da-da, it then goes to a really quick voting phase, which is 3-2-1. Everyone points their finger at the person they think is the informant. If there's a tie, the people with the most votes against them will flip their alignment card, and if they're informant, then the rebels win. If there are no informants, then the informants win. Reset. Game can go again.
And it's a really, dare I say it, interesting mashup, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you've got the world of the resistance. Mm-hmm. You've got the one night sort of version from One Night Ultimate Werewolf, where it all happens in one night.
Yep.
You've got the special abilities, like in Coup.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a mashup of Coup, the Resistance, and Werewolf.
Yeah.
But with an interesting take on all those three.
Yes.
And I really like that special, the special ability, the task that we had to do,
yep,
where there's a different task depending on whether you're an informant or a rebel. And trying to nut that out, I guess, is part of the puzzle. And then there's the bluffing side of, oh, well, no, you thought I did this, but actually what I was doing was this other side of the action.
Exactly.
I really liked it. I mean, we played one or two rounds. It did go really quickly. It's the, as I said, it's the world of the resistance, that sort of futuristic world. Nice looking art, big chunky tokens.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is another winner.
Yeah, because it kickstarted so successfully, it's got all the really good components. It comes with a free copy of, I'm just going to have a look, Win-Lose Revolution, which is not Win-Lose Banana,
no,
but it's exactly the same, except again, in the Resistance universe.
That's right.
It comes with all the really nice stuff. It came with some coup promos, which, Leon, you've possibly put in your coup box or just thrown away.
Perhaps.
But what I do like that it's came with is little player aids, which give you what all the 10 roles are, plus all the 10 special abilities, so that when it comes to that conversation about, yeah, you're the thief, and yeah, you're the this, and I'm the that, you can bluff yourself through something, because you can say, well, I am the thief, and I am a rebel because I did this. It'll tell you quite clearly what the action is that you did or potentially could have done. So it just gives everyone enough information, but also relies on everyone being a little bit sort of sneaky, I guess, if you want to be.
And look, indie boards and cards do a great job with these games. Ted Auspach obviously pumping them out. And I tell you what, while we're here, let's give away a couple of games!
Hey!
Because they're very relevant. We're actually going to give away a copy of Coup.
Wow!
Andrew Frost, congratulations.
Yay!
You've won a copy of Coup. And, not to be outdone, Don Bone,
mm-hmm,
you have won a copy of Ultimate Werewolf.
There you go. That is completely apt.
That is crazy. That is just two games we've given away for free that are much better than the one Garth just talked about.
Oh! Oh!
I have to play it again, but it didn't do.
Well, that's because
for
me, you're scum and you're an informant.
Yes.
Now, look, before we played this game, we got a most, speaking of epic games, a most epic game to the table.
Yep.
Now, Leon, you've talked about this one on the show before because it is one of your favourites.
Yep.
But I tell you what, this took up so much table real estate. The waitress came out with our food and she had no idea where to put it. People in the pub were walking over looking at this. One lady came and sat down like, oh my goodness, what game is this?
Yeah, she was a little bit inebriated.
Well, I tell you what, it has to be a good game to make room for my goat Dagwood dogs. I had to put them on a chair next to me instead of on the table where they deserve to be seen by everybody. Blood Rage, I may have mentioned it once or a dozen times on this show.
Mm.
I finally got to the table with you lads. And as you say, it's epic and epic and epic, but I taught it to you and we played it in 2 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was amazed. And I did, I posted a photo of this. Actually, I think this is our most liked photo on our new Instagram account.
Ooh.
Is Leon pointing to a table absolutely covered in boards and minis and food and beer and everything. We packed it all in. I don't know whether the new Sydney Hotel has seen the like of this game before or will they ever see the like of it again.
Most likely, yes.
It is epic.
Mm.
And look, I've got to jump in quickly and say, I know you love this one, Leon.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Now, there was an element of, dare I say it, risk of just, you know, numbers of, well, In Risk, it's numbers of little tiny things. In this, it's numbers of massive miniatures and monsters and things moving into an area. But then there's the special abilities associated with whether it's your leader, whether it's your warriors, whether it's your, I was going to say medium, not your medium, your shaman type person.
Mystic shaman.
I knew it started with M, yeah. There are creatures that you can co-op to come to your side, giant sea creatures and giants and elves and... It just looks amazing. The minis are phenomenal. But it plays... If Fantasy Flight made this game, it'd be an eight-hour epic. Blood Rage...
Was it Cool Mini or not?
Yeah, Cool Mini or not.
Of course. You know, they've packed in a whole lot of game in not a huge amount of time for what it is. As we said, 2 hours. And Garth and I had never even seen this game, let alone, you know, watched a how-to-play video or anything. So, firstly, Leon, you did a great job of explaining it.
Thank you very much. And also, technically, we played with an expansion, too. The Mystics, or Shamans, I can't remember which. They're an expansion to it. They're like a lot of tiny little module that you could add to it. And I like games like this that have a really solid base, and then they give you little modules that you can go, I'd like to add this, or maybe add a few of them, or I don't really like that one, I won't add that one.
Yep.
I think that really goes really well with games like this.
Yeah, well, look, it mixes a whole bunch of genres. I mean, Vikings, mythical, area control, a bit of card and hand management, lots of epic minis. It looks fantastic on the table. I'm not sure that I really, really, really liked it nearly as much as you, Leon, or even as much as you, Mark. But I did enjoy this game. It was good fun. I was glad that it played a lot quicker than I was expecting it to. It's clear why it funded so well on Kickstarter when you look at all the plastic and all the stuff that comes with it. I just don't know what it did particularly new. However, I can't back that up with any examples off the top of my head.
Well, yeah, I must admit, I wasn't expecting to like it. I took one look at all that plastic and thought, oh my God, we're going to be for hours. It's going to be overly complicated.
Yep.
It's not going to be easy to follow for an idiot like me. Oh, well, I'm prepared to go along for the ride. And I enjoyed it much, much more than I thought. On reflection, I thought, oh, it'd be really nice to have some dice in there. But you've got that element of surprise with those battle cards where you've got your figures and you've got your strength in there, and then you both play, or you all play a battle card, which can be a value from anything from zero up to, I think, some of them like six or even more that can change the outcome of the battle. So there is that chance element or that hidden element. Look, I'd definitely play it again.
It's very similar to another game, Comet, which is also one of my favourite. But something about this game that needs to be shouted out is that the drafting for the cards you do in it, you guys have to draft straight off the bat. So a game that I've just explained the rules to that looks big and complicated, you have to draft straight away. Understandably, that first round, you're a little bit, I kind of know what he's told me, but I don't really get it. But I would like to think that by the second round, and definitely by the final round, you know what you're after.
Yeah.
And I've played some games that I've played multiple times and still really not known what to draft.
Yep.
And the fact that this game can do it nearly within the second round is something commendable.
Yeah, look, I agree with that. And the drafting is not a painful experience because the cards are really easy to understand.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate that. It's always a risk when you're playing your very first game and you're drafting from the Age 1 or the Ragnarok 1 cards. What's powerful? Because what's powerful now is going to be absolute piss week when it comes to age 2 and age 3.
And a card that gives me X victory points, well, is that a lot or not many?
Right. Yeah. So I guess the main thing out of this game is that I beat Mark. So that's good. And now let's play a song.
That was The Vandals with I've Got an Idea for the Movie on Edge Radio 99.3 with The Dice Man Cometh. You know what, lads? That song gives me an idea. These board games that we've been prattling on about for weeks and weeks, and you guys have for years and years, I'm sick of them.
What?
I'm sick of all these reading these cards and moving around these little meeples, and that's ridiculous. So you know what I want to do? I want to sit back and I want to watch a film. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to watch a film based on a board game.
Well, hang on, what?
That's
what?
Right, a film based on the board game. And I tell you what, when it comes to choice, you have got literally maybe a third one I don't know about.
Yep.
So there's not many. So I want to go back to the beginning and I want to watch the first movie that was based on a board game.
Okay.
And that was Clue from 1985, based on the murder mystery board game by Hasbro that in Australia we know as Cluedo.
Just sounds awesome straight away.
Well, easy now. Well, let's see where he's going with this. So The movie, as well as the game itself, is actually based off Agatha Christie's book, And Then There Were None, which actually recently over this Christmas, a three-part TV movie was brought out with Charles Dance from Game of Thrones in it.
Yep.
And was absolutely brilliant. I recommend that highly. So the movie itself tells the story of six guests that are invited to a strange mansion and must cooperate with the staff to solve a mysterious murder of a man known only as Mr. Body, who is the man that brought them together in the first place. And they all have a connection to each other and to him, but they don't know what it is yet. And the tagline for this film was 7 suspects, 6 weapons, 5 bodies, and 3 endings.
Oh my goodness.
I know, crazy talk. It was directed by Jonathan Lynn, who's most famous these days for directing The Whole Nine Yards with Bruce Willis and Matthew Perry. He also directed a film in 2010 called The Wild Target, which has Bill Nye, Emily Blunt, Rupert Grint, and Martin Freeman in it, which is about a hitman that's about to retire and he has one last job to do. Also absolutely brilliant.
Oh, that's an excellent movie. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, Wild Target.
I loved it. Yeah, wow. Anything with Emily Blunt in it, I'll watch over and over and over. But yeah, that was a really good one.
As opposed to the three highly talented guys I just mentioned as well. But yes, Blunt is also happens to be in it. So yeah, so he directed it. It was written by John Landis, who's most famously known for writing the Blues Brothers, but also he has been the writer, co-writer of several different things and the producer of a bajillion different things. It's starring Michael McKean, who was the blonde dude in Spinal Tap.
Oh, yeah. Yep, yep, yep.
So he's, Mr. Green. Christopher Lloyd, of course, Back
everything.
To the Future.
Come on,
Doc
he's
Brown.
Awesome.
He plays Professor Plum. And most importantly, Tim Curry of Rocky Horror and Stephen King's It fame plays Wadsworth the Butler. So they're the three biggest stars in there. Actually, a bit of trivia on this. Carrie Fisher, or Princess Leia to you and I, was supposed to be in this film, but a few days before it was due to start filming, she might have gone to rehab, which you could probably read a story about on Google, which is absolutely mental. Yep. But either way, so when the movie was released in cinemas, it had, like I said, three different endings. So each cinema you went to, it could have one of the three endings you didn't know. When it was released years later as a home video or DVD, it has all three endings in a row on it, which is the one that I saw, and I couldn't imagine watching it any other way. The budget for the film was $15 million, and sadly, when it came out, it kind of flopped a bit.
Really?
It only ended up making $14.5 million. Oh, so not the worst flop in the world, but critically, it was absolutely panned. They were saying things like the characters were one-dimensional, even though they're based off board game. But either way, one of the biggest complaints...
I get it. One-dimensional.
One of the biggest complaints was that it wasn't that funny for a dark comedy. They didn't find it was that funny. But, and there's a big but, luckily, it has got a cult following these days.
Yeah, and are you the cult?
I'll let you know in just one moment. On the internet, on the Metacritics, it has a professional movie critic score of 3.6 out of 10, which is abysmal. If you saw that on any review, you wouldn't go near it. However, the user rating by the common man, which is very much all of us in here and most people listening, is 8.9 out of 10.
Wow.
Which is 2 points away from The Godfather and Shawshank Redemption, which sit at 9.1. They've got a few more user reviews than this, but it's not the point. Did I like it? I think I would say, other than Mad Max Fury Road, this was my favourite film I watched last year.
Wow.
What?
Wowie.
I'm saying I possibly enjoyed it more than Avengers Age of Ultron.
Oh, my goodness.
I absolutely loved it. I watched it again last night just thinking maybe I was just in that mood where it just hit me out of the blue.
Yep.
But, it is spectacular. And Tim Curry's performance in it is amazing. I can see why it was kind of panned at the time. The humour in it, for the 80s, it did seem a kind of a bit off. But nowadays, that people understand lots of different kinds of humour and whatnot, it is absolutely spellbinding.
So it was ahead of its time.
It's very much ahead of its time. And with the exception of maybe somebody in the film saying, but who's got a cell phone? Which obviously they don't because it's the 80s. Other than that, it could have been made last year. It seems relatively timeless. And all the outfits and stuff and the characters and set designs and stuff are really good. I won't say much about the film because I do want anybody that listens to this to see it. It's worth a crack.
Yep.
But there is one scene that's the most famous scene from it where Tim Curry as Wadsworth after all this stuff has gone down, and not just Mr. Body has died, a few others have died along the way. There's about a 20-minute scene where he is running, and I do mean running, around this whole mansion and dragging these six people with him, and he's reenacting and telling them everything he thinks is what has gone down in the last hour that you've just watched. And it is absolutely hilarious. There is one section where he grabs the woman who's playing Mrs. White, I believe, and he runs up the stairs with her. Halfway up the stairs, she falls flat on her face, and he just keeps going with the dialogue and keeps running up the stairs. It's the timing of it is very, very good. And yeah, it's a few little bits of trivia about it as well before we wrap up on it. Professor Plum, his character in it, works for the World Health Organization, which is part of the United Nations organization,
yep.
Or you know who for short.
Well, there you go.
You see what they did there. Each character that drives up to the mansion in this film does so in a car that is the same color as their player piece in the game, which is, you know, that's what you'd want to do. The secret passages that are in the mansion actually all lead to the same rooms that they do in the game as well. So if you know the game well enough and you're watching this film, you can actually kind of start working it out in your head. And, yeah, all that different kinds of jazz. Two other things. In 2013, there was word that a remake of this might go down with Gore Verbinski of Pirates of the Caribbean fame.
Yeah.
With, of course, if he's going to get involved, Johnny Depp taking the Tim Curry Wadsworth role, which would be absolutely brilliant. And one final thing, the final line from this film. So everybody that's listening, don't listen for 15 seconds or skip ahead on the podcast. The final line of this film is, "They all did it. Take them away. I'm going home to have sex with my wife."
But clearly, this is much more epic than that other, I'm guessing you're thinking of, board game film, Battleship.
I may have to watch it because I've been told Liam Neeson puts the least amount of acting in a role in human history.
Wow.
He basically is a cardboard cutout of a man.
That's a big call, even for Liam.
Quickly, there's no time.
Well, we might have to watch Battleship in about 10 years and see whether that's aged as well. Yeah. What about the fact that there is a Monopoly movie in production?
Yeah,
which is about the story of a young kid who goes out to make his millions. Good old story of capitalism.
Well, quickly, there's no more time to talk about board games because we've got to give away some board games. Let's give away a copy of, speaking of heroes, Tim Horsberg. He's won a copy of Pack of Heroes. And we'll just cross his name off so I don't say him again. Rachel Edwards, she gave us an epic video with her kids reading board game news.
Great.
They are going to love a copy of Family Business, that sort of mafia backstabbing in a family type way. They're going to enjoy a copy of Family Business. Now, we should say again, while we're giving away all these games, that most of these games came from, of course, one of our friendly local game stores, Area 52.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much to the Schwartz and his team there. Let's give away one more before we go to a break. Tegan Smith, she's won a copy of 101, that great little game from Grail Games about computer programming. So let's hope that all those people don't own those games. If not, I'm sure they know a lot of people they can swap them with. We've got time for one more track and then we'll come back and finish the show.
And that was Concrete Blonde with Happy Birthday. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Mark, give us some more names. Let us give away some more games before we talk about something I've been playing.
Okay, and happy birthday again to my son, Will, who's 18 today and thinks that being 18 means you can do anything you like. And I said to him, no, it means now you can go to jail for doing whatever you like. Let's give away a couple more games. Someone who's been a fan of the show, or at least a listener, I don't like to call anyone fans of the show, a listener, I don't think this is his real name, but it's Rudolph Valentino.
What?
He's picked up a copy of Go West, the epic Leo Colavini Euro game of travelling across the United States.
Now, is this game still in shrink?
It is.
Wow, a brand new game.
Absolutely. And also another good friend of the show, Justin Hawkins, who taught us how to play Imperial Settlers and then let us beat him.
Yep.
He's picked up another Euro epic, Vikings.
Ah.
One of the first Euro games that I ever played. Still play it now on Yukata. This is a new, it's been recently re-released. New printing, looks really great. So Justin, we hope you'll organise, you'll enjoy that one. We've got a couple more to give away at the end, and that'll make 12.
Yeah, perfect. So what I got up to on Australia Day was waking up, was spending a bit of time with the family and doing all of that. But then I headed over to good friend of the show, Oren and Georgie's house, and we finally played the RPG by Fantasy Flight, the first one in the series of five, the End of the World RPG. Ooh. Now, we have been playing quite a bit of D&D in the last few months with George and Oren and a few others, so we decided, let's just can D&D for a little bit, and how about try something a little bit different? Because I've wanted to play this because it really intrigues me, the fact that they've got these end-of-the-world scenarios where you go through and essentially you try and survive. Now, this one, like a lot of them, you are actually going to be playing yourself. So you're not playing a mystical wizard anymore, Mark. You're not playing a world-renowned wrestler, Leon. You get to be yourself. Now, the good thing about this is that you don't have to play it for days and days and days. It can be done over the series of a couple of different sessions.
Ah.
But unlike a lot of the normal role-play games that we've played, it doesn't necessarily have a win condition. It's more about the story and the journey. And essentially, the easy way to describe it is you're sort of living through the Walking Dead kind of scenario. Yes, yes. But the first part of this game, once you all sit down and you say hello and you might open your packet of chips or your bottle of wine or whatever it is you get to create your character. Now, your character is yourself. So what is there to create, I hear you say? Well, there are exactly six things that you need to create, and they're going to start under three headings. The first one is your physical. Now, the physical is made up of two halves. You've got your dexterity, and then you've also got your vitality. You've then got your mental skills, which is your logic and your willpower. And then finally, you've got social, so your charisma and your empathy, all of which are very, very important. But the way you create these is, first of all, you're going to have a maximum pool of 10 points that you can spend on yourself, on your character. You've got six different characteristics to spread those 10 points through, so you're not going to be absolutely brilliant at anything unless you are absolutely useless at something else. So once you've allocated those 10 points, it then goes around the table in a secret voting mechanism where you've got a red die each and a black die each, red being positive, black being negative. All your other players will then go around and vote on whether you are being truthful with your stats. And I say, I'm going to give myself a 5 for dexterity because I'm really good at origami. And if they disagree with you, the game master will tip out those dice, see that the majority of players disagree with you, and you have to lower your stat because of that.
Yes.
So that'll go around where, you know, you'll all vote on the dexterity or the logic or the willpower or the empathy. And at the end of that, once all the other players have done that, you'll have your basically your starting stats. So it's really interesting, and it's a get to know your fellow RPGers, because straight off the bat when you're creating characters, I'm being told I don't have the physical prowess that I think I have, or I thought I was good, but I'm kind of not so good anymore, and I can't numbers or words good anymore.
And it sounds like there was no charisma stat, which is quite apt probably for that group of people.
Well, it was great. There was charisma. You weren't listening.
I was at home, so yeah, it's fair enough.
But there is charisma and there is empathy. I gave myself very low scores in both of those, and unfortunately they all agreed. But the payoff is, once you've done that, if you've had a stat lowered because you thought you were better than the rest of the group, you then end up getting a positive feature. So a positive feature will be something that will potentially help you in the end of the world. So if I've been told that I'm a slower runner than I think I am, I might get a positive feature that says I've got long endurance. So I might not be able to run fast, but I can run for a long time.
Forever.
Exactly right. Or if, on the opposite, they say, no, you're smarter than you think you are, you will then get a negative trait. So I might be smart, but the negative trait might be he thinks he's always right and therefore won't listen to other people. So look, it's really, really interesting. The character creation only took about 20 minutes, half an hour with five of us, which was great. The fact that you then play yourself is really, really interesting. the fact that we were playing it with people who pretty much knew each other quite well was good. However, my brother-in-law, who's just moved down to Tassie, played, and he didn't know half of the people from a bar of soap, so that was quite interesting. And you played in your own hometown. So our RPG started in Hobart, and we needed to survive. So we visited our own houses. My kids turned into zombies, so I had to run away from my own children.
Did you come and get me? I live around the corner from Oran and Georgia.
Yeah, we didn't, actually.
Oh, thanks. But, thanks a bunch.
But Trent, you'll be happy to know, he got partially eaten by his dog Trooper and died on the Brooker being attacked by zombie goats. So I think that's fair to say we've all had that fantasy.
It sounds like fun, and I'm curious to hear more, because there's other ones, aren't there?
Yeah, but there's four or five others.
But not now, because we're running out of time again, and we've got three more games to give away.
Talk quickly.
And also, I'll say, well, at least we've got one person listening live, Bernhard Waltenspiel.
Yeah.
No spoilers, Bernhard. Don't post on the Facebook page who's winning. Let those people hear it in the podcast themselves. The last three games to give away, we have Doshboard Golf going to Adam Fowler. We have Magic the Gathering Arena of the Planeswalker, that epic, going to Craig Westbury. And last but not least, we have Sheriff of Nottingham, that awesome bluffing game, going to man who dressed up as Sherlock Holmes, or at least had a big pipe, Brennan White. So congratulations to all those listeners. What we'll do is we'll post a list of names on the Facebook page once the podcast has come out.
Yeah, and what we're going to do is, just to make sure that everyone has plenty of time, we're going to give everyone a month from when the podcast is released to be able to contact us to get their postal address so we can send it to them. But you've got a month. After the month, we might have to give away some of those games if they're not claimed. I hope they're all claimed.
And look, we might even have a chance to give away more games coming up soon, because guess what, guys? We're almost at 500 likes. Wow. We only need 10 more.
Isn't that amazing?
But speaking of almost running out of things, we're almost running out of time, so we've got to go. Have a great week. Listen to the podcast. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.